Women is our talk today. How can godly women help towards building good families? Well, there's an awful lot of things that we can think about today. And in a little while, you'll have a pink sheet, which I don't want you to look at just for a moment or two. Can you do that? I knew if you had it, you'd want to read it. And that's fine. I do understand that urge. But we will come to that in a sec. So if you can just exercise incredible self-control, that'd be wonderful. Thank you, Mary, just in case I totally lose it. Okay. What I'd like you to do first, though, is to think about your own family and all of the people that make it up, but also think about people who aren't related to you. And think in that plethora of people, a huge outreach of people that have been a part of your life from the time you were little, are there three or even one, start with one person who has been outstanding in what they've contributed to your growing into the person you are? Okay, now if you can think of one, maybe you can add two more, just for a second or two, think about it. Who in all that growing up years added into your life something very special? Now, if you've only got one, that's fine. That's not a competition to see how many you can get. I thought of my Nana. Of all the people in my life, my Nana was just a little ray of sunshine to me. And she was special because she was an encourager. She called me Sunshine, and she used to say, "I'd love to take you home and keep you because you're so lovely." And, I mean, it's lovely when people think you're that gorgeous, isn't it? And while everybody else, you know, thought I was stupid or fat or clumsy or my hair was always an issue because it's very thick and it took a lot of effort to make it look tidy, my grandma thought everything about me was wonderful. I could do no wrong. And that was just wonderful. When she came to visit, she'd say, "How's my sunshine?" And that was just wonderful. I felt so good when she came. My Auntie Ada, she had red hair, slinky red dresses, and lots of husbands that I don't think really were her husbands, but we all call them Uncle, Uncle Tom, Uncle Fred, Uncle Ben. And they came and went, and my auntie was just this exotic creature. But in the midst of being exotic, she would throw clothes at me that she had found somewhere, or she'd invite me down to stay with her, and we'd go into this amazing hedonistic world of pleasure and food and friends, and it was just exciting. I lived in the country in a one-room house, can you imagine? Then coming down with this lady that knew everybody and everybody knew her. And she was a great deal of excitement in my life. 2 days before she died, I met her at Kincumber in the shopping centre, and she was wearing a slinky yellow tracksuit thing, all in one with a zip up the front, and little yellow boots and a little yellow hat. And she was 88. And I thought, good on you. You're amazing. And it was lovely to talk at her funeral about just what an influence she'd had, because everyone else thought she was dreadful, and my mother didn't really like her association with me, but I just took the best things. And then there was another lovely lady that actually sponsored me sponsored my family as we were migrants from England, for the 10-pound Poms. And she took us into her house, and she went and lived in the front part of the house and gave us the back part. And she was the most elegantly lovely woman. She had a huge, great table in the kitchen, which was always packed with relatives and friends and food. It was a bit like the CWA comes to my house, you know. It was just wonderful. So she had a lot part in my life too. So hopefully you've got some good memories of people who've sown into your life. And they may not always be relatives, and they may have only had a small part, but when you think of them, you think of them with great warmth, and you think of them as people who have helped sustain you and lift you up and encourage you and give you maybe something to look up to, I don't know. But what makes a godly woman? Because we're talking about godly women sowing into lives. Now, none of those people I've mentioned, except my Nana, were godly women. So really growing up, I only had my Nana who believed in God. But we are, I think Mary believes that we are all godly women. So what is it that makes us godly women? Is it because we're extra specially good and lovely? You and I know that's not true. We're godly women because we're saved by Christ. And because we're saved by Christ, because we love God, we want to reflect his love in our lives. So if you think of us as kind of godly mirrors, people who really want to show other people what God is like, then that helps us to see that that's what we're talking about today. We want to be godly mirrors shining into the lives of the families that we touch. Now, we touch families in lots of ways, not just the ones related to us. We touch families in our street. We touch families in the wider church. We touch families through organisations and clubs we belong to. We touch families when we have coffee with a group of friends who represent other families and who are talking about those families to us. So we've really got a wide influence. And we have to think about, what are we doing with that opportunity we have to sow into the lives of the people whose lives we touch? Obviously, there are some close to us that we'd love to sow into a lot more, but I'll talk about that in a little while. One of the things I think is really, really hard, and I just think at Christmas time this becomes difficult. Do you get those Christmas letters? You know the ones I mean? They tell you how wonderful a family is. Yeah. Yeah, we got them for years. We still do. And I remember one of the letters, the couple that were writing it said, I love watching my children going to school. They had two children. With their arms around each other, talking and sharing and loving each other. Well, when my children had their arms around each other, it was because they were trying to strangle each other. So if somebody had their arms around somebody, I had to say, leave her alone, or put them down, play fair. Now, I was interested, Mary's chosen cutouts on the table. How good is that? Because one of the things, you can see I'm having a lot of trouble here. One of the things I want to say and keep in front of you is that we are not looking at cut-out families that we can fit our family into. There is no such a thing as this family ideal. We all now pattern ourselves on it. We never know what is going on behind closed doors. We don't know what that family is really like. They look great coming to church. All the kids look tidy. Kathy. She's not here, is she? Kathy used to wear shorts and bare feet to church, and people would comment. And I had lovely dresses. I just didn't want them. And I used to look longingly at the families with rows of little girls with their hair all neat and their little party dresses and their little patent shoes and their little white socks. Mine would be hanging by one arm from the thing, swinging, turning somersaults, beating the boys at whatever they were doing. And I just looked the other way thinking, well, we're not all the same. And I have to share with you that couple that were holding each other's hands and going to school together were being abused by their father for years. Their only comfort was holding each other on the way to school. I didn't know that. I just thought, darn it, I'm going to make my children be more loving towards each other. Because that was the cutout that I thought we had to fit. We don't. There's no such a thing as the ideal family. It doesn't exist. Every family is different because God in his wisdom has made. Look at us. I can look around this room. There's not two people who look alike. Not two of us got out of bed this morning and even thought we'd wear the same clothes. Or do our hair the same way. Or behave in the same way. We are so different. How incredible that we are so, so different. And we get excited when we find there's something the same, don't we? We go, oh, you like that too. It's unusual. So families are different. And we just need to be very careful also, before we start thinking about our family, because I'm going to be talking about some traits of a family, but there's one word I want you to learn, and it's a psychological term, but it's so important. It's called enmeshment. When we think that a good family is about being totally, totally together, so that no one thinks anything differently to anyone else. Now, enmeshment often happens in couples. Couples tend to think that headship is about having to think and believe everything the other person does, and it's not like that at all. Nor in a family does every member have to behave in the family way and stay in the family and have no other thoughts or activities outside. It's unhealthy. And when a family has to do everything together, that's as much a problem as a family that does nothing together. So be very, very careful that you're not encouraging or applauding the family that's enmeshed. It isn't healthy. And grandparents, do not become enmeshed with your grown-up families. They can go on holidays without you. They can have a month or 6 weeks or 3 months and not ring you. It doesn't mean they don't love you or think of you. They're happy that you're getting on with your life and they're getting on with theirs, and you must have a life outside the family. You have to. They've got to live their life now and you've got to live yours. So remember that word, enmeshment, and be very careful when you think a family that's sticking together is glorious and wonderful, because it could be that that family really is enmeshed and it's unhealthy, and you don't need to encourage that or be part of it. Okay. The verse for today is this. That is why a man leaves his father and mother and is united to his wife, and they become one flesh. The families have grown up, they have married and moved on, and you've done your job. Now you're in the bleachers, you're part of a cheering squad, or you're down the front with your pom-poms waving them on, but you're not in the football match. That's them. They're doing their thing and you are on the sidelines. And if you're an auntie or a cousin or even somebody in the street, be very careful about accepting too much involvement with a family. Let them be who they are and just be there occasionally to support them. But what are we looking for in a good family? What makes a good family? You got any ideas? Probably in your head, you've got pictures. But remember, the good family isn't a cut-out pattern that you can fit families into and go, oh no, that doesn't fit, like a cookie cutout. The families are going to be very different. The way they express, what we're going to look at on your pink sheet in a minute, will be different for every family. So be very careful as the onlooker and the cheer squad to be looking for the traits, but the expression of those traits may be different in every family. It's just like a dress shop. You can go in and different people will choose different ways to express their personality and what they wear. They'll all come out with clothes on. That's fine. But they'll all be different. So that's what we've got to keep in mind. Similar, but different. All right. What are the traits? Well, you've got them in front of you and you might want to add bits to it. So I thought perhaps if you had it would be a help. We'll go through them fairly quickly just so that you can get an idea of what kind of things we're looking for. So a healthy family, that's a nicer word than I think than a good family, a healthy family, a family that's growing and interacting and so on. First of all, a family, a good family, a healthy family, communicates and listens. So if you're part of a family or you want to be helpful, even when you integrate into that family for a little while, perhaps for a meal or something, try asking what questions and how questions. Don't ask anybody why. They'll drum up some silly answer that's nothing to do with anything, and half the time they don't know why. So why are you doing English? I don't know. Have you seen that teenage answer? What is it about English that you like or don't like? And they'll tell you. How do you cope when this happens? Kids will answer that question really well. But why don't you like Amy is, I don't know, she's just a dag. What is it about Amy you don't like? Oh, she's really rude. Okay. Can you see the difference? Okay, ask the what and why, not why. Genuinely listen without comment. As we get older, we've got a fund of intelligent and helpful things to say. Don't say them. They will ask you when they need to. Did you hear little Rachel, the granddaughter of Malcolm Fraser, at the service? She said, I had a big decision to make, and I rang my granddad, and he was sitting up in bed reading next to Granny, and it was 10 o'clock at night, and I told him my problem, and he didn't give me an answer. He listened, and at the end, I kind of knew what to do, and I felt much more comfortable about it. What a clever granddad. Yeah, what a lovely thing she's got to remember. A granddad who listened but didn't comment. And also the family can encourage that kind of sharing and communicating and listening by having times when each member of the family can share something. My son's developed a lovely little thing at their dinner table at night called Sparkly Moments. Now, his children are little, 10 and 5. And they get very excited because when dessert's put out, they go, Sparkly Moments! And sparkly moments means everybody around the table, including guests and grandparents, have to come up with their best moment in the day, their sparkly moment. And it's a great opportunity if you've just been to something special with the children. You can say, my sparkly moment was watching you do hokey pokey. I love that. So you get a chance to be encouraging, but it also gives the children a chance to say their sparkly moment. And even when they visit me, we have sparkly moment, which can be, you know, the moment that I caught the wave or the first moment I stepped in the ocean and found it wasn't freezing cold at all. It's things like that. So where there are opportunities like that to talk and listen to the children. Even just at Christmas time, we go around the room and we say, what was the best and worst thing that happened to you this year? And because we haven't all been in touch, everybody gets a chance. Some of them are hilarious, some of them are quite serious, and we get a chance to find a little bit about each other. So communicating and listening. Affirming and supporting one another. In a family, our main aim is to support and encourage. Somehow we've got it into our heads that our main aim is to pull down and destroy and criticise. But if we do nothing more than be supportive, we are doing a fantastic mirror of God's love for us. Okay, it makes it good to be around each other in the family. The family becomes positive and hopeful, and I heard a lovely story on 702 the other afternoon. I wonder if you did. This lady rang in, her name was Janelle, and she said when she was a little girl, she went to school, and then they called the mum up and said, come into the office, and Janelle came in to her 5 or 6 year old and sat down, and the headmaster said, look, Janelle's got learning problems. There's nothing we can do for her. She's so backward and she's not learning to read or write or do all the things. So our suggestion is, and this was quite some time ago because Janelle's now a grown woman, my suggestion is that you relinquish her to the government, and she can then go down to Sydney, because they were in the country, and go to this special school where there's boarding facilities and get some help. And the mother said, get up, Janelle. The mother worked in a pub, and Janelle said, my mum was pretty rough, but very strong woman. Get up, Janelle, she said, we're going. And she said to him, nobody's going to take my kid from me. She's my kid and I love her and I'm going to keep her. And they walked out. Well, I don't know what they did for schooling in between, because Janelle said recently when I was getting my PhD, she said, as I was standing there in my cap and gown, clutching my diploma thing in my hand, Mum came over and she said, I've left out one bit I have to say to you. She said, as the mother went out, she took Janelle by the arm and she said, I don't care how backward you are, darling. You're my little girl and you're going to stay with me. So when Janelle got her PhD, Mum leaned over and whispered in her ear, I don't care how backward you are, Janelle. I still love you, darling. That was a mother who loved and supported. And that's our job too, in the family, to be supportive and loving and encouraging. A good family, a healthy family, teaches respect for others. That speaks for itself, doesn't it? But long time ago, my dad owned a shop in Paddington on the corner, and so you can imagine the people that came and went in the 50s. And I often served in the shop and helped out. And there was this very strange lady that came in, and she always drove in an open car, and she'd park outside, and she came in for milk and bread, and she had sort of hair that was whitish that she'd teased out, and she wore sort of the kind of clothes you'd wear to a cocktail party at 3 in the afternoon. And she had too much makeup on, but she always wore long sleeves. And I was snickering about it behind the counter, as you do at 14, I suppose, heaven help me. And my dad came over and he said, "Now look, you ask that lady to show you her arm." And I said, "Can I have a look at your arm?" And she pulled her sleeve up and she had a number tattooed down her arm. Now my dad then explained to me about the concentration camps and about what this woman would have gone through and how it's left her with nothing but the desire to be beautiful and to have good things around her. And her expression of it might be bizarre, but that's who she was, and I was to respect that in her. And if he caught me sniggering again, there'd be more to play. So that kind of develops respect. It teaches you that you don't know what's going on in the lives of other people, and therefore you treat them with dignity and respect, even when they behave to you in what seems to be bizarre or strange ways. A good family develops a sense of trust. A few years ago when we were in Hong Kong, just for fun, I was driving home after we picked up all the children. I thought I'd picked up all the children. I just turned around and said, "Let me count you. 1, 2, 3. Who's missing?" And a little voice from the back said, "Kathy's not here. You left her at the YMCA." Now, at this stage, we were miles from the YMCA in terrible traffic. I found somewhere to do a U-ey and sweating and hot and breathing deeply and hyperventilating. I got back, and there, sitting on the steps of the YMCA with her hands like this, was Kathy. And I said, "Oh, Kathy, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry." And she said, "Mom, I knew you'd come back for me." Now, that's trust. When you've got a mother as silly as me, that's trust. And trust in a family is about knowing that the people are there to help and support you, feeling comfortable about their role in your life. And children need to learn that trust, and we need to express that so that they learn to be trusting and trustworthy. The family exhibits a sense of shared responsibility. This is not about chores and tidy rooms. This is about trusting kids to do something that you've asked them to do, and them trusting you as part of the family to take responsibility for something that they may not have even asked you about. It doesn't mean packing their bag for school or taking over, but it means encouraging them to be responsible within the family. The other day at creche, one of the lovely Christian mums there, her little boy, was 2, and she put 2 bags down on the floor and they fell over. And this little fellow went, "Oh," and went over and picked up the bags and put all the stuff back in them and stood them up against the table. Now, no one noticed except me. That's shared responsibility. He's responsible. He feels responsible. It's not a bad feeling to feel responsible for the members of your family. I also heard the opposite. A mother said to me, "My son was trying to get a job and he was on the phone. And when he got off the phone," he's 18, she said, "Did you get the job?" And he said, "Oh, they said, look, they you know, they seemed worried and there was things, issues, and you know what teenagers are like, didn't finish any of the sentences." And the mother said, "Well, what? What did they say? What did they say?" And he said, "Oh, look, I don't know, but they said, look, call me again in a month or something." And she said, "Give me the phone." And she rang up. Now, how's the kid feeling? How's the kid feeling? You know, you wonder why they shrug their shoulders. That's the only way they can cope with this kind of behaviour. They're just lost. So we have to be careful, even as people sewing into the families, even if we're not the mum and the dad, that we don't take over. We have to encourage them to be responsible, and we're just sharing that responsibility. And that might just be something as simple as the mum saying, is there anything I can do to help? No, mum, forget it. You forget it. They say forget it, you forget it. You don't go behind their back, because then they just can't be bothered. Okay, a good family has a strong sense of right and wrong. That's pretty obvious, isn't it? Years ago, I bought some chickens, and one of the chickens had a hole in the bag, so I took it back and got another chicken. And then while I was there, I thought, oh, I'll get two more. And it was all very complicated, and the lady's trying to, you know, do it all up on her computer, and there seemed to be three chickens, then there were four chickens, and I ended up with five chickens. When I got in the car, I just had a quick look at the thing, and it had four chickens. You know, chicken, chicken, chicken. Where's the other chicken? I have five chickens. I said to my son, I have to take this chicken back and pay for this chicken. He's going, Mom, that's ridiculous. They cheat you all the time, you know. They put their price. And he gave me, he was about 14, I suppose. No, it's embarrassing. You're not taking it back. I said, I'm taking it back. It's the right thing to do. Now, I, under God, I'm very, very impressed with the fact that my boys have an incredible sense of right and wrong and what is honourable and good to do. But I think because you model it to them, they then pick up the idea that this is really the way to go. So that even as perhaps people like grandparents and cousins and aunties, we can sew in by saying, well, the right thing to do, I think, would be this, if I'm asked. And the kids learn from you and from their parents. Okay, a strong sense of family in which rituals and traditions abound. I'll guarantee if I asked every one of you here, there would be rituals and traditions in your family. And you know they are rituals and traditions when children say, we always. I can't change the Christmas menu because we always have Chinese hors d'oeuvres, steamed dumplings, every year, and prawns. And one year I thought I'd do something different, and I just thought I'd better check out. Oh, Mum, we always have dumplings. You can't change that. That's the way it is. I mean, that's the world turning. You just don't change it. And those rituals and traditions are really what holds a family together, aren't they? So sometimes if we're only a cousin or an auntie and we don't see the family a lot, we find out what their rituals and traditions are and we join in with those. And we too, as other people, may have rituals and traditions when they come to us. At Easter, my tradition, although some of the children are now too big for this, make sure I get up there. Have you seen these eggs? Yeah, I'm sure some of you have. They're really a lot of fun. We do it this way. We get the littlest person to choose the first number, because they can usually do numbers, and they open the egg, and then the adults have a look at what's in there, which is a little donkey. You probably can't see it. And they have to tell us the part of the Bible story that is about the donkey. So if their mum and dad don't know, the kids go, whoa! And then I have a Bible verse which I can hand out to them, which has the passage on it. They love it, and it doesn't matter how many times we do it, we get to number 12 and there's nothing in it. And I say, why is that? Why nothing in it? Have I lost it? I always play around a bit. Have I lost it some? And then the littlest one will go, that's because Jesus rose from the dead and he's alive again and the tomb's empty. Oh, no, that's fantastic news. How good is that? So each year we do that. It doesn't matter how many times I do it. They always play along with the crazy nonsense that I go on with. But it makes our Easter lunch a very special, fun time. A healthy family has a great balance of interaction between the members. Be careful when you're visiting with your family, whoever that happens to be, down the street or wherever. There may be one little person who never gets a word in. And some of the things we can do is to look around and see how the interaction's working. There'll always be one person who dominates, and then there'll be somebody who's very quiet. And we need to give them an opportunity to talk. My husband's lovely at this. My son Andrew is a beautifully intelligent young man, but he has grown up with very talkative siblings and a mom, and so he holds back. And Michael will often say, "So Andrew, how are things going for you?" And then he'll talk. So that's a lovely contribution to somebody's life, to give them an opportunity to share a little bit about what's happening with them. A balance of interaction then is really important, and respecting the privacy of each other. I listen to friends talking, and there's a lot of spying and nosy parkering and gossiping about what's going on in families that is not respecting that family is private. And even just a little thing like knocking. Do you knock on doors when your grandchildren visit or when you're in someone else's home? Do the mothers and fathers that you know, or if you're a mother and father still with small children at home, do you knock on their door? Do you say, "Excuse me, is it okay if I pop in here?" Do you say, "The cleaning lady's coming today, can I tidy up your room, or would you prefer to do it?" Do you respect the fact that they have diaries and little locked boxes with special things in it and private phone calls and things they want to talk about with their girlfriends that they don't want to share with you? That's all part of being a private human being. And sometimes they just want to go and be on their own. And there are some families that can't bear that, and they'll be going, "What are you doing in there? What are you doing? Where are you going?" But we all need time alone, don't we? I go on the front veranda with a coffee. I don't want to read. I just want to think, be alone. It's lovely. And I respect that privacy in other people that visit or stay with me or in other families when I'm visiting. I have one granddaughter who is intensely alone, and I knock on her door and I say, "Am I allowed 5 minutes of your time?" And she's lovely, and she'll show me all the things. I say, "No, I'll leave you alone," because I know that's what she really, really prefers. All right, with value service to others, I don't think that is, that's not a particularly hard thing to think about, is it? But a family that thinks about serving as a family is lovely, but even if individuals are serving in their own way others, we need to encourage that. And I think sometimes as an outsider, you can do it more than you can if you're a mum. You can often ring somebody and say, "Would you like to come and help me, write a compassion letter?" I find that really hard to do. And children often know what to say. I've got a daughter who'll draw things for me on the compassion letter because I can't draw, and I think my kid would prefer a nice drawing than me rabbiting on about boring old 75-year-old life. There are lots of ways we can get them in, or we can say, "Look, we're doing this, we're getting this box of thing. I wonder if you'd like to come shopping with me for the Christmas box." So we can encourage that, even in neighbours that we hardly know. They love it. I'm doing this, would you like to come and have a part in it? Stick the labels on or whatever. So we encourage service. The family that fosters table time and conversation. Oh, the days of setting a table are going, aren't they? Do you find? But it's really good to encourage it. And I find when I have the families visit me because I set a table, and at night I always light candles, in the morning I put flowers on the table. I've noticed more and more when I go to stay with them that we have the table set. And when I went to one of my families recently, the little one had gone out and got flowers and put flowers all down the centre of the table. And she'd folded all the napkins in a fancy way. She's five. And she was waiting at the front door and she said, "I've got the table looking beautiful, Grandma. You'll love it." And I did. And I think, well, that little sewing in, family time, is important. The table set is important. Why is it important? Because it's probably the only time we're all together and we can talk. We can talk about the day. We can see how everybody's going. We can sense when someone's sad or unhappy or feeling out of it or whatever. Okay, and a good family admits to and seeks, shares leisure time. Shares leisure time. So it's great when a family plays together, has fun together, falls out of boats together, laughs, you know, doesn't catch the fish together but wishes they had, and so on. A healthy family seeks help with problems. It's nothing wrong with saying we've got an issue. And there's nothing wrong with you being able to say there are people I know that could help, and perhaps offering some names and people that you know who could help in that family. A couple of sessions, and often the family then gets back on its feet again and has somewhere to go. If you can't do that, often if you've got good books, a library of good Christian books on family life can help a family just say, oh, that's what's missing. That's what's not happening. And that's a great help. Okay, and of course a shared religious view. And we long for all those families to really know Christ. Now, negatives. I'm going to have to whiz through this because I'm taking too long. How not to help. Now, you might want to keep a note of these, but you'll know them. Criticism. No matter what you think about finding fault, it has never helped a person I know unless the person says, what is it I'm doing that isn't helpful? And then they have to be in a very strong place for you to give them any helpful advice. But criticism is when you just pull down for the sake of pulling down because you don't like what they're doing. But look, not all families are the same. So the fact that you don't like what they're doing may be that you have an issue, not that they have an issue. So your criticism will not be helpful unless they ask you for help here. It's very crippling too, because once somebody's found fault with you, you find that you can't work. You can't go forward, you feel depressed, and the family suffers because individuals in it are struggling. And the kids know it and the other adults know it, and it's really unhelpful. Interference. I think if we learn one thing as we grow older, it's to keep a back foot. We are the cheer squad. We've got the pom-poms. The football match is going on. We're not running on telling the referee what to do. Okay, we're letting them be what they are. We cannot interfere. Your interference will only back them up harder and make life more difficult. It's hard to be on the sidelines. It's the hardest thing in the world. And your heart's breaking over what's happening in a family you love and you want to get in and sort it out. You can't. You cannot. But you do have a powerful tool, which we'll talk about in a minute. Gossip. Gossiping about that family to others will get back to them. It will. It'll get back by someone saying, oh, your mum was saying that da 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 the other day when we had coffee. I didn't mean to say that. I just wanted to share with a friend. If you're going to share with a friend, you have to share with a friend who understands what it is to button up. And that's not gossip. That's because you've got a burden and you need some support and help. And that's different. But gossiping is not on. Often I hear people withdrawing. This is unhelpful too. I can't be bothered with them, says my friend. That they want to be like that, they're just going to have to get on with it. I have nothing to do with them. I'm not ringing them. Nope. And I'm even thinking I'll be away at Christmas and bad luck. Now that isn't helpful either. Nor is grandstanding. Well, they should be looking after me. That's what I say. I'm 75. Haven't they realised that I'm past putting on a Christmas lunch for 22 people? They should be looking after me. Whatever have they done for me? They didn't even get to Mother's Day this year. And they deserve all they can get. That's grandstanding. It's cruel and it's ungodly. So ungodly. We may feel like that. I'm sure we do on some days. But that's not an attitude we should develop or think is okay. How can we help them? We as outsiders are the encouragers. We're the pom-pom girls. Okay? We are modelers. When the children see what we do, think about the people who sowed into your life. They modelled for you what it was like to be an adult woman. And the qualities, the fun they had, the way my Nana used to read her Bible and pray, those things stay with you. That modelling stays with the family. And that's what they will remember long after you've gone. They will say, oh, I just, you know, she always went to church and she would encourage me to come. I didn't always go, but she, to her, God was really important. Those things stay with them. a servant attitude. So we ask the family, what can we do to help? How can we be helpful? What is it that would make life more bearable for you right now when you're telling me that things in the family are not good? So we ask the what questions, not why you're so fed up, but what is it I can do? How can I be helpful? Now, they may say, oh, if we could just have a weekend away, just without the kids, just time to think, or to go to that Marriage Matters thing. Right, I can do it. I can mind your four children that will run me ragged, but I'll do it because this is important, because that's my servant attitude, that if I can help in that way and you can get some help here, this is going to help this family to stay godly and good and strong. And you know what our secret weapon is? Prayer. If you've got your pom-poms and you're not praying, you're just wasting your energy. Because as soon as the family talks to you or you remember them or you're in your normal praying time, that family should be before you. The neighbours down the street, the auntie's family, the cousin's family, the children that you've brought up's family, they should be the ones you're praying for. And when they tell you there's an issue, that's what you pray for. And you know why? Because God answers the prayer. It is incredible. I prayed for my granddaughter, the oldest one of my son's family, for many long years, that God would touch her life. And out of the blue, a chaplain came to their school, a lovely Christian man, and they're in an area where normally it would be high church sort of chaplaincy. And he invited them to Easter conference, and she went and gave her life to Christ. Now, I couldn't have envisaged that happening. God did. God knew. And as I prayed and prayed, God had that answer already there in his hands for me. And I went, woohoo! I was so pleased. It was just so exciting. There are practical things we can do, of course. If we have a little bit of money, encouraging children in the families to go to the Christian camps, and helping out, you know, in our church, when the kids go to FAT, it is as cheap as it can be, but it's still a burden on families with two or three children in that age group. So if we can help by saying, what if I gave you so much towards the littlest ones' fees, that would that help ease the burden so they can all go? Or what about a crusader camp? Give them the brochure and say, when you choose one, I'll write a check. If a friend wants to go, we'll share them between the two. We feel if we spend our money on nothing else but camps, it's terrific. We would rather not go out for a dinner. It might cost us $150. We'd rather put that into a Christian camp because that's where the blessing will come. We can text, email, send letters. I constantly make cards and send them to the children for all sorts of reasons. I ring my niece, I Facebook her. Another niece rang me yesterday just to say that she'd met my godson way down the south coast, lovely godly guy who'd invited them to his local church and was working in their family. So that's something else to pray for, and I keep in touch with her so that I know what's going on for her. So keeping in touch is great, helps you to pray, helps you to sow into their lives. Babysitting can be a help. If you can get away for a night with your husband to something important like that date night, it can be really helpful in the family. Books. I'm blessed because I've got a husband who's got, heaven help me, a whole house full of books, which we've now got to bring into our house at Copa. I'm scared about that. But they're good books and they're useful books. So if a family has difficulties, we can find a book that will be helpful. I write stories for my grandchildren. And I write stories in which I make sure that there are positive things about his family or her family. So just recently for my littlest one, Eliza, she said, tell me about when I got born. So I said, what about I write you a story about how you got born? And so I drew pictures of her mum with a big tummy and her brother and I had been waiting, and I put a calendar and I ticked off all the days it took until one day there was Eliza, and I had a picture of Eliza, and I had a few words because she's only four. She's barely able to make out her own name. And I finished up with, "Isn't God wonderful to give us a little girl as beautiful as you?" And we read that every time I go, over and over and over, how I got born. Because you, Eliza, are precious. God planned for you to come. Your mum went, I don't tell her this, but her mum went through so much to have her. And here she is, Miss Perfection, bubble curls, bright, breezy, funny as whatever get out. She keeps the family laughing. She's just amazing little creation. And she needs to know it. And she needs to know that God is part of that plan for her. He is the plan for her. So writing stories, I find a good way to go. When I send a birthday card, I'm terrible at craft. I fail at art or anything. But I get a lot of photos and do collagey things. And I had things that they'd said when they were little, and I print them all off and stick them all over it, and then say, "You are just the most precious gift from God." So that it's not just a card from the shop, but it's a card that says, "I love you, you're special." And I even do it with the adults. There's lots of ways of doing it. You can get stuff off the internet, pictures, things to colour in. It's not hard. And the cards you can get in a big box, and they cost a few dollars. They're not expensive. But it says, "I love you and I support you and I encourage you." Gifts out of the blue to say I love you. I was going through Smiggle the other day and they had a sale on, and there was this crazy pencil case with six zips on it. And when Callum, one of my grandchildren, was little, he could never do up his zip and he could never pronounce zip. And so I found this pencil case and I sent it to him and I said, "Here's a zip pencil case to remember how you couldn't do up the zip, but now you can do up six zips." And it just out of the blue, silliness, but it says, "I love you, I support you." You can do it with neighbours, bunch of flowers. You've baked a cake and it's too big for you to eat. You cut it in half, take it round. It's just encouraging, supporting, sowing into their lives. And it gives them a warm, good feeling. If a family feels good, it's a healthy family, because it's got the strength then to keep supporting the other members in the family. So anything you can do will be helpful. And don't forget to say, "I love you." Every time I hug, and you've seen the Hurt family, they are hugely much bigger than me, taller than me. But I hug each one and I say, "I really love you." Jonathan, my son, is 6'4". And so I hug his chest and he bends down and like this, and I say, "I really love you." And he says, "I've never doubted it." And we have this little routine every time. "I love you. I really love you. I've never doubted it." And then he says, pats me on the head and he says, "Mum needs to say that." Now, saying "I love you" is simple. Hugging children, saying "I love you" is very affirming, very encouraging. And remember, sometimes they may not have had a big hug that day. And even a hug, when I visit my niece, I always give her a big hug and I say, "You are so special and I love you." And she goes, I know, Auntie Chris, you are too. So it's a good thing to do. Now, hopefully, in all of that, there'll be something you can pick up that maybe you can start doing that you haven't done before. But how do we get to this point in the talk without even mentioning the Bible much? Well, my reading for today is the whole of the Bible, and I didn't think we had time to start and get into that. It's about developing God-like attitudes of love and service and prayer for the families whose lives we touch. And we touch many families in our walk through our own lives. It's about building trust in a God who loves without condition and who forgives with mercy, not remembering our sins. It's about holding the God-given values of respect, esteem, and care for others. It's about knowing that we are all different and yet are loved by God so much And God loves us for our differences, not despite our differences. Look at the disciples. You couldn't get 12 more disparate human beings, could you? All loved by Jesus and cared for in their own special, different ways. It's about showing us how to be servants, how to find a way to support and love families so that they can gain strength and courage to face what each day brings. And for some families, it can be jolly hard with children who are disrespectful or pulling away, children who have emotional or physical disabilities, husbands who have their own issues too. That can be a hard road for them. So our encouragement is such a valuable thing for them. It's about our prayer that they will be a family who will love and serve God and be a blessing in time to others around them. And if we've had even a little mustard seed of input into helping them to reach out to other people, then we've been too a blessing to the people around us. We can do it. Our secret tool is prayer. And if we're praying, and if we say to people that I'm only praying, don't say that. Leave out the only. I am praying. I have just entered into the biggest battle, and I am sure God is going to come through and do for this family what I'm asking. So I'm in there fighting like mad. I've got my pom-poms of encouragement, but I've also got a secret weapon that I'm using. So may God bless you in that, and I hope that really, really works for you. And see it as a joy, but sometimes it's just jolly hard work, isn't it? So God bless you in that too.